Your conference is being recorded.
Okay, everyone, so it's 4 o'clock, we'll go ahead and get started. So I'll probably be muting everybody's lines a little bit later, but right now it seems pretty quiet, so I'll just go ahead and get started and go over the general introduction and structure of the calls, and then we'll get into the meat of the 2021 EJ grant opportunity.
Yep.
All right, deal. So greetings, everyone, again. So this is the first pre-application assistance call for the 2021 Environmental Justice Small Grants Opportunity. So this is for funding opportunity number EPA-OP-OEJ-21-01. So as you probably know, there are two opportunities that we released this year, 01 and 02. 02 is for the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Grant. This call is for the small grants, okay?
I have no idea.
These lines, at, yep, as everybody's coming in. Thanks so much.
The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Be unmuting everybody's lines after each main session I go over in the request for application, so we can open it up for questions at that time. I just wanted to go over the general structure of the call. And so my name is Jacob Burney. I'm the EJ Grants Program Manager here at EPA. I'm your main contact for any questions that you have about the opportunity for the small grant. So my email address and my phone number are right there at the top of the request for application. So hopefully you have a copy of the request for application either on your laptop, or your desktop computer, or printed out for you. Please do have that available so you can follow along with me as we go through the entire solicitation during this call, okay? Now, the structure of this call, this is a 90-minute call, so we'll go to about 5:30 p.m. Eastern time. I'll have time, as I said before, allotted for questions after each main section of the request for application. So I'll be opening up your lines at those particular times. So probably be 7 or 8 times that will open it up for questions over the next 90 minutes. And at the end, if we still have time, I'll have time for general questions as well. So this is the first in a series of these pre-application assistance calls. So we've scheduled to at least have one call every week through April 7th. So if you, your colleagues, or if your colleagues or potential partners weren't able to make this first call, completely understand, but there will be plenty of opportunities, at least one each week over the next month. To come in, call in, ask their questions to me, okay? So, yeah, let's go ahead and get started. So hopefully you have the request for application in front of you. So we'll be starting on page 1. So we're looking at the summary section, 1 through 5. I'll let you get there. So we'll start with a quick summary of the opportunity. So, again, this is the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program, or EJSG for short. We'll be providing grants to approximately 56 community-based organizations nationwide this year for community-driven projects, which engage, educate, and empower underserved communities to better understand and address local environmental and public health issues. So this request for application, or RFA for short, it defines underserved communities as communities that have environmental justice concerns and or vulnerable populations, including people of color, low-income, rural, tribal, indigenous, and homeless populations that are disproportionately impacted by environmental harms and risks. So community-driven projects are projects that include activities where community residents and or their representatives are integrally involved in the thinking behind and execution of those activities. So applying organizations should have a direct connection to the underserved community impacted by environmental harms and risks. And that direct connection is very important, especially in the point allocations and the evaluation criteria. So we're looking for that direct connection between the applicant organization and their target community. So this RFA has 4 areas of emphasis. 1 are projects addressing the impacts of COVID-19 on underserved communities. 2 are projects dealing with climate and disaster resiliency. 3 are ports initiative projects. And 4 are projects proposed by small nonprofit organizations. So let's go over the funding totals. So the total estimated funding is $2.8 million with approximately 5 grants per EPA region. So there are 10 EPA regions. We're looking to award approximately 5 of the small grants in each of those 10 EPA regions. So each grant will be for up to $50,000 for a 12-month project, so a one-year project. So this year we did receive a plus up in funding for EJ grants, which will allow us to fund more grants and at a higher funding level per grant, because normally our grants are only $30,000. But this year there'll be $50,000 and we'll have 56 of them instead of the normal 40. We usually only are able to award about 4 per region. So we're very excited about the extra funding that we have this year. Additionally, in terms of the funding total, EPA's Office of Transportation and Air Quality, or OTAC, is contributing an additional $300,000 for projects specifically in support of EPA's ports initiative. And again, we should be able to fund approximately 56 projects nationwide at $50,000 per project. So applicants should plan for an October 1st, 2021 start date for their 12-month project. So due dates. So applications are due by Friday, May 7th, 2021 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. So be aware of the time difference if you're not on the East Coast. So if you're on the Pacific Coast, the West Coast, know that your application is due earlier for you. It's due at 8:59 p.m. Pacific time. So definitely be cognizant about the time difference if you aren't on Eastern Standard Time. And all applications must be submitted through grants.gov before that deadline of Friday, May 7th, 2021 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. So next, if you're following along, we're on the bottom of page 2, going into page 3. So EJ Small Grants or EJ CPS. So which opportunity is for me? So we're offering two different opportunities this year. So which one is better suited for your particular organization? So our budgetary plus up and funding this year is allowing the EJ program to offer two grant opportunities, as I just said. One for the small grants and one for the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Awards. So be aware that a single organization can receive only one environmental justice grant award between these two opportunities. So you can receive either an EJ small grant or an EJ Collaborative Problem Solving Award. You cannot receive both. So why? We know that there are a multitude of communities nationwide dealing with environmental injustices. So for our program to have as wide a reach as possible, we want to be able to provide funding to as many different communities as possible. So one organization, one award. Okay. So the EJ Small Grants opportunity is designed for organizations who are just starting out, which have smaller staffs and operating budgets and have never received a federal grant before. So the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Program is for larger, more experienced organizations who have more established partnerships locally. So while the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Projects, the other opportunity, they do provide more funding per project. So those opportunities provide $160,000 per project versus the $50,000 for the Environmental Justice Small Grants. The Collaborative Problem Solving Projects are twice as long. So they're 2 years versus 1 year. And they are more competitive because there are fewer of them. So we're only going to be awarding about 20 of the collaborative problem solving awards nationwide versus 56 of the small grants. So just be aware of those differences as well. So, and you can look at the chart there at the top of page 3 to help you determine which opportunity is better suited for your needs. So again, remember, if you apply to both, you will be wasting your time. Okay, you'll be wasting your time on one of them. So you can only receive one award between these two opportunities. Okay, so that's where you are with that. And again, I'll be opening up to questions after I finish the summary section. Okay, over just general questions, and then we'll start moving into the bulk and the nuances of the entire solicitation. So next, the bottom of page 3, we're going into the special considerations this year. So these are your areas of emphasis and special considerations. So again, for the 2021 opportunity, the program will prioritize projects in the four areas of emphasis mentioned before. So these four areas of emphasis are made up of a combination of other factors, special considerations, and set-asides. So these areas of emphasis will apply when making final funding decisions amongst high-ranking applications. So eligible applicants may qualify for multiple areas of emphasis or none at all, and that's fine. So the areas of emphasis that may be considered are as follows. So you can see them starting on page 4. or at the bottom of page 3, actually. So public education, training, emergency planning, and or investigations on impacts of COVID-19 on underserved communities and vulnerable populations. So you can see there the details therein. EPA may give special consideration to projects that address the impacts of the current COVID-19 pandemic on vulnerable populations. So applicants are encouraged to develop innovative plans and processes to conduct effective outreach to underserved communities in the midst of social distancing and local stay-at-home orders, especially in places where internet access may not be readily available to all residents. So there are some examples of possible projects and eligible activities there. So sharing information about EPA-approved disinfectants that are effective against COVID-19, addressing underserved residents' increased exposure to in-home or air pollutants or water pollutants as well, and other healthy housing issues, training of community health workers as community educators, as well as educational information about COVID-19 vaccines and vaccine safety information. So that's an eligible activity as well. So be aware that environmental justice grant funds cannot be used for human health studies, including taking blood or other medical information from humans. You also cannot use EJ grant funding for actually administering vaccines, COVID-19 vaccines. So you can share information about vaccine and vaccine access, but you can't actually use our funds to put shots into arms. Be aware of that. Okay. Next priority area we have, or area of emphasis, is projects addressing climate, disaster resiliency, and or emergency preparedness. This is on page 4. So the effects of climate change and extreme weather events tend to adversely impact the most vulnerable communities and populations disproportionately. Therefore, EPA will give special consideration or may give special consideration to projects that address the needs of underserved and vulnerable communities that have been adversely impacted or are likely to be adversely impacted by natural disasters. So these include, but aren't limited to, hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, floods, earthquakes, and future pandemics. Okay. Next area of emphasis on page 4 is our Ports Initiative funding. So just some background about this. So since 2016, EPA's Environmental Justice and Ports Initiative programs have partnered to support effective and meaningful engagement between communities, the port industry, and port stakeholders. So emissions from diesel equipment at ports disproportionately impact nearby communities, think fence line communities, that are often comprised of low-income populations and people of color. So to be considered for Ports Initiative funding, your project must include an explanation of community concerns related to diesel engine emissions from a port or rail facility. 2, a description of how your project will prepare the community to engage with other port or rail facility stakeholders to address these concerns. And 3, your project activities can only relate to the Clean Air Act, Section 103B3. Okay. So OTAC is looking to fund approximately 6 small grant ports-related projects of up to $50,000 each. So that's our Ports Initiative funding, looking to fund approximately 6 projects dealing with ports, okay, and the concerns of fence line communities in close proximity to ports or rail facilities. And going next, our 4th area of emphasis is our small nonprofits. So this is the small nonprofit set-aside track. You can see that on page 5. And these details are EPA intends to set aside approximately half of the total available funding under this announcement. That would be about $1.4 million for awards to nonprofit organizations who have 10 or fewer full-time employees on staff at the time of submission of their application and award. So this set-aside is intended to promote environmental justice funding to those communities and grassroots organizations that need it the most. So again, there will be 2 tracks, one for small nonprofits of 10 or fewer full-time employees, and 1 track for all the other eligible entities. So this way, applicants who are smaller and who have fewer resources will compete against similarly sized organizations for these grants. So Ports Initiative applications will also be organized into these 2 tracks. So if a Ports Initiative application also qualifies as having fewer or 10 or fewer full-time employees, then they will be put along with the other small nonprofit organizations as well. So to qualify for consideration under this set-aside, applicants must submit documentation with their application, such as an employee roster, verifying the number of full-time employees on staff and the associated hours per week and salary or wage details for those particular employees. Again, these are your full-time employees. So if you do qualify for the set-aside at the time of submission, but your organization does grow in size after you submit your application, which may happen, especially depending on the impact of the possible COVID relief bill and the economic stimulus package, and things start loosening up due to vaccine access. So if you do, please let me know, Jacob Burney again, let me know as soon as possible if this happens and you do grow beyond the threshold of 10 full-time employees. However, if you don't inform me of your change in size, then you may be deemed ineligible to receive an award. That is, if you qualified as a small nonprofit beforehand and you grow larger, let's say you had 9 full-time employees and you grow to 14 full-time employees by August or September, you just need to let me know that you've grown beyond that threshold as soon as possible, because if you inform me soon enough, more likely than not, I can just move you over to the larger track or to the track with larger organizations. But just keep me apprised, because if you don't, we might have to deem you ineligible to receive an award based on being a small nonprofit. So just be aware of that, okay? So if you don't, now the opposite isn't true. So if you don't qualify for the set-aside initially and your organization shrinks in size to fewer than 10 full-time employees after you submit your application, you will not be moved to the set-aside track. You'll remain with the non-set-aside track. You'll remain with the larger organizations. Okay, so only if you did qualify, you have 10 or fewer full-time employees at the time of submission, so you have 8 or 9 qualified, you submit your application, and a few months from now, you grow larger than 10 full-time employees, just let me know as soon as possible, and we more likely than not will be able to just move you over into the second track with the larger organizations. Okay, so next details. So in applications, so applicants should state which, if any, of the areas of emphasis apply to their specific environmental justice small grant project and provide details on how those other factors apply. For example, all applicants should state on their project summary page whether they are applying for Ports Initiative funding, whether they believe their organization qualifies for the small nonprofit set-aside, and whether their project addresses COVID-19 impacts and or whether their project addresses climate disaster resiliency as well. A failure to do so, to mention these things, may affect EPA's ability to consider these factors during those selection decisions. So EPA may verify all the information included prior to selection and consider this information during the evaluation project or process. So please note, so all eligible organizations are encouraged to apply. All eligible project types are encouraged to apply. So under this announcement, projects not addressing COVID-19, climate disaster resiliency, or ports are still eligible for award. Organizations with more than 10 full-time employees are encouraged to apply. The special considerations only apply as other factors the selection official may consider in determining selections among high-ranking applications. So the most important thing is for you to put forth a well-written and strong application. You do not get more points for qualifying for any of the special considerations or areas of emphasis. Really, how this works is, for example, if there are 2 high-ranking applications, one scores a 92 out of 100 and doesn't address any of the areas of emphasis, and another application scores an 88 and addresses the disaster resiliency consideration, then we as EPA may select the 88 that addresses that disaster resiliency focus. However, if the scores are 92 with no special considerations versus 60 out of 100 with multiple considerations, then we will not select the 60 out of 100. So the special considerations, areas of emphasis, and focus, we can only pick a lower score if it's still a relatively high-ranking application, and 60 out of 100 versus an 88 or a 92, that isn't relatively high-ranking, that isn't competitive. So again, putting forth the best application and project you can based on the needs of your community is much more important than trying to contort your project into hitting on all the areas of emphasis. Remember, these are community-driven projects. if the community truly drives the direction of the project plan, then more often than not, your score will reflect that. Okay, so that is our summary section. So before we get into more of the contents by section, let's just open it up for questions about anything I covered in the summary section. I'll be going over in details much more in terms of what are eligible project activities, project types, different types of examples of COVID-19 related projects, what have you. But anything in the summary that you want to ask questions about, let me open it up for you guys now.
The leader has unmuted your line.
Hi.
If you have yes.
This is Anita. I'm calling. My question is, if you don't have employees, but you have full-time volunteers, does that matter?
So you have no full-time employees, but you have volunteers who you don't pay a salary or wage.
Exactly. Right. We're all retiring.
Then you would qualify. Right. Then you would qualify as a small nonprofit because it sounds like you only have one or two full-time employees yourself and maybe somebody else. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, can I jump in on that? No, I think she's saying she has no employees, and that's the same as us. We just have some contracted admin support. We don't actually have any full-time employees. We have just really active volunteers.
You both would qualify as small nonprofits.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Hello, this is Andrea.
Hi, Andrea.
Yes.
That's fine.
I have a question about the small...
That's in the morning, other than at 10.
The small grants program.
Yes.
You said it had to be for an organization that's just starting out.
I have your email, New World One.
I'm sorry, Andrea. So it looks
okay,
like
I'll send you an invite to that email for next Wednesday at 11.
Andrea?
I'll send it for now.
Yes.
Then you can unmute your line. Just 1 second, okay?
Okay.
Just 1 second.
The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Okay. So to unmute your line, Andrea, just press #6. So
okay. Now can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Awesome.
Yes. I have a question about qualifying for the small grants program. It says that the organization has to be just starting out. You know, we have a small staff, less than 10, full-time staff, mm-hmm. less than 10. We have a small operating budget. Mm-hmm. We have never received an EPA grant. We have received federal grants, but not one from EPA. Will we still qualify?
Yes, you would qualify. You would be eligible for a small grant. Those are just recommendations on those pages. So more likely than not, for a smaller organization, a small grant would likely suit your needs a little bit better, especially if you haven't received an EPA grant in the past. Those are just kind of guiding principles. But you can definitely also apply for the collaborative problem solving. But if you haven't received an EPA grant before, you might be better suited to just start with the small grant.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a little bit less competitive as well. Okay.
Regardless of when we were actually established. Right.
Yeah, regardless of when you were actually established, yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Anakshi. May I ask a question, please?
Yes.
So I couldn't find in the RFA where language on how long is the project period and if those funds of up to $50,000 are for just year one.
Yeah, the entire project period is 1 year. So these are 12-month grants, so you would start October 1st, and you would end October 1st, 2021, and you would end on September 30th of 2022.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, if there's
Yes. My name's Linda. I have a question. Can a port authority apply for a grant to look at a private marine terminal situation and not our own land, our own facility?
So a port authority is not an eligible organization. So eligible organizations are incorporated nonprofits, U.S. territories, tribal governments, or Native American organizations. So a port authority can be a partner on a grant. You can be a subawardee or contractor, but you can't be the lead applicant on a project. So if you're working with an eligible entity on some ports-related issues, that would qualify and be eligible, but you yourself can't be the lead applicant. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Very helpful. Thanks.
Okay. Yep.
Hello, this is Ellen.
Yes.
Hello, this is Ellen.
Yes, yes, I can hear you.
Are there any items that are not allowed? So, for example, we're looking at things like hotspots or computers or for the beneficiaries, and then salaries, or you mentioned community health workers. Some of that would be in our grant application. Are all those allowed?
Yeah, I'm going to go over eligible activities here in the next few minutes where I can go over allowable costs and things like that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Great. Yeah. All right, everyone. Yeah, let's go ahead and move forward to the next section, the funding opportunity section. So I'll go ahead.
Hey, Jacob. I have a quick question. My name is Ray Bold.
Hey.
Can you hear me, Jacob?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I hear you.
Yeah, my question is on the Port Authority. I know you made mention about communities close by. Operation on the environment justice. Some of the things that, if you can tell me, some of the things that are being, that will be, need to be looked at with a community in close proximity?
Some of the things, like examples
undisturbed.
Of.
Repeat, please.
I'm sorry. Yep, I hear you.
Yes. Underserved community that is close to a port that has just been been reactivated. What are some of the things that a community in applying for an EPA grant should be able to look at? Can you give me any information on that?
Yeah, so we're looking for an explanation of your concerns, the community's concerns related to emissions coming from that port. That could include traffic, you know, from the port. Let's say it's a harbor or something like that. So from vessels and boats coming in, as well as any freight going through local communities. Onto, you know, shipping and traffic and highways and things like that. So any emissions from anything like that would be of concern to the community. You would have to provide a description of how your project will prepare the community to engage with the port. So kind of building and establishing some sort of rapport with the Port Authority as to have they included environmental justice concerns, have they offered any kind of interplay with the community. Are there any public notices, public meetings, things like that? So that would be a part of a potential project as well. So building that collaborative nature between the Port Authority and the port administrators, as well as the local communities, is some of the fundamental things that we would be looking for in an eligible Ports Initiative funding project.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Question.
Are airports considered ports in this? RFA?
Hello, Jacob? Yes, airports, I'll have to touch base with the Office of Transportation and Air Quality to make sure that airports are eligible, but I'm pretty sure that they are. So they would still fall under that. But let me be sure to you, okay? Or be sure for you and get back to you. So if you can send me an email just with that specific question, I can get back to you, and I can also post that answer on our frequently asked questions as well, okay?
Thank you.
Yep. Yeah, and I believe there was one other gentleman that had a question before I was going to move on. I'm sorry.
Jacob, this is Luke. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I can hear you.
So, I know you're alluding to the qualification section. Just wanted to ask, are schools qualified for the SMART grant? Organizations within the school or the school itself alone? Public
schools, Schools, in general, schools are not eligible to be the lead applicant on a small grant. So eligible entities include nonprofit organizations, U.S. territories, so territorial governments, tribal governments, and Native American organizations. So there are some schools that are their own incorporated nonprofit educational institution. And in those instances, sometimes those are eligible. But in general, a school that is part of a local school district would not be eligible to apply directly. You can still be a partner. You can still receive some of our funding through a potential contract or a subaward or something like that. But you can't be the lead applicant that actually pushes the button on grants.gov to apply to the opportunity. Okay?
Gotcha.
Okay, everyone. Yeah, so since there's questions about eligibility and eligible and allowable costs, let's just go ahead and move forward to that section. So I'll mute everyone, and we'll move ahead. Thank you so much. Okay, so we're going to be looking at funding opportunity section. So these are pages 6 through 13 of the request for application. So I'll let you all get there to page 6. I guess I didn't mute. Let's try to mute you. Okay. So, starting on page 6, so what is environmental justice, or EJ? So you see that there, environmental justice is the fair treatment and meaningful involvement of all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, or income, with respect to the development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. So EJ is especially important at the community level, and that importance is reflected in the goals of the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program. What are our program goals? So the Environmental Justice Small Grants Program strives to be one of the more accessible federal grant programs for community-based organizations. So our program is targeted especially for community-based organizations where the organizations themselves manage the money, not a larger university, not a local government. So our goal is to support community-based organizations that apply to our EJ grant opportunities, regardless if they receive one of our grants or not. So all applicants who apply to the 2021 opportunity will be added to our EJ grants applicant database. The database will help the EPA EJ program identify and work with additional underserved communities outside the context of our grant awards as well. So types of projects we fund. So in general, underserved communities are dealing with several different environmental issues at any one time. Therefore, our statutory authorities allow us to fund a wide range of different project types. These include, but are not limited to, projects that address air quality, water quality, lead and other toxic substances, illegal dumping, green job training, food access projects, and more. So you can see the link on page 7 for additional information that can help you. Here in this section of the RFA, we also provide some detailed examples of eligible COVID-19 related projects and other general non-COVID-19 projects. Some allowable COVID-19 projects include Healthy Homes Campaign, especially for residents spending more time in Let me make sure that everybody.
The leader has unmuted your line. The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Good. Sounds like we're good. All right. So, again, I mentioned Healthy Homes campaigns, especially for residents spending more time in substandard housing due to local stay-at-home orders. Food insecurity projects that reduce vehicle use in areas hit hard by COVID-19. Public awareness campaigns about EPA-approved disinfectants and reductions of asthma triggers. General information related to COVID-19 vaccine access and information can be shared as part of an EJ grant project as well. However, as I mentioned before, administering vaccines, again, shots in arms, is not an eligible activity. Also, EJ grant funds cannot be used for human health studies, including taking blood or other medical information from humans. So we are going to post a frequently asked questions portal on both our Environmental Justice Small Grants page as well as our Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving page. And any questions you have about these opportunities that you haven't, that you aren't able to ask on one of these pre-application assistance calls or webinars, you can always reach out to me directly via phone call or email. So what are our program's funding authorities? So the Small Grants Program is designed to address multi-statute environmental and public health issues. For this reason, each project must include activities related to at least one of the following federal environmental statutes. We have the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, Federal Insecticide, Fungicide, and Rodenticide Act, Marine Protection Research and Sanctuaries Act, Safe Drinking Water Act, Solid Waste Disposal Act, and Toxic Substances Control Act, and those associated sections of those specific acts. So you must clearly and conclusively identify and cite at least one of the federal statutes in your work plan. So linking to a qualified environmental statute is required. If you don't mention a statute in your application, then your application may be ruled ineligible. Please do not let this happen to you. Applications that address more than one statute will not benefit by receiving higher scores. And for the Solid Waste Disposal Act, please be aware that applications supporting brownfields work, for example, large assessments and large cleanups, or work that includes extensive cleanup activities beyond the need for an allowable demonstration, experiment, or training, those are not eligible for this funding announcement. The Brownfields program is a more suitable program for those specific activities and needs for your communities. So going into eligible activities, so bottom of page 8, a proposed environmental justice grant project should have a learning component as part of the project. Projects should include gathering or transferring information or advancing awareness. So research, public education, demonstrations, monitoring, training, development, investigations, surveys, and studies are examples of authorized grant activities for our program. Examples of unacceptable grant applications involve performing, as I mentioned before, large-scale cleanups, treatments, routine recycling services, major disposal and or energy recovery projects, or large construction projects. With these projects, there would be little to no funding left for any kind of public education, training, or outreach. So those are unallowable project activities. Again, proposed activities should lead to improved understanding and awareness. For example, if you want to install rain barrels as part of a clean water or green infrastructure project, you need to make sure that those rain barrels will be used in trainings or monitoring or public education activities. Or if you want to repurpose an old building for a community center as part of a much larger community project, you could use the environmental justice grant funding to propose to have several residents trained as shadow and to shadow the renovation team as part of a new environmental jobs program and hold demonstrations at the center. So those could be allowable activities for a much larger community project where refurbishing an old building is part of the project. So just remember, whatever you propose and whatever issues you want to address, make sure that there is a learning component to your project for those specific activities you're going to fund with the environmental justice grant funding. So demonstrations. So let's go over the definition of demonstrations. So that's there, the middle paragraph on page 9. So demonstrations are also an eligible project activity. Your project doesn't have to include demonstrations, but if it does, then those activities must comply with the details listed in this paragraph. So for a project to qualify as a demonstration, the project must involve new or experimental technologies, methods, or approaches where the results of the project will be shared so that others can benefit from the knowledge gained. For our grants, most demonstrations focus more on new approaches and new methods rather than on new or experimental technologies, just because new technologies can be expensive and oftentimes the target community has yet to be exposed to newer ways to address environmental issues that can really help them in their community. So again, the idea of new or experimental is relative. We're not asking you to utilize some cutting-edge technology that universities or the Tesla company are still experimenting with. That wouldn't be reasonable. So you can propose a demonstration that features approaches and methods that has been used elsewhere. But if you do, you just need to make sure that your particular demonstration is a little different than previous ones and explain that difference clearly. So find a way to differentiate your particular demonstration project from others that have come before it. Again, you don't have to create something completely new or technology, a new technology from scratch, but you do need to find some new wrinkle to your demonstration that will allow yours to qualify as new. So that's kind of a nuanced definition of demonstrations. That's the definition that we use here at EPA. But again, your project doesn't have to include demonstrations. But if it does, you need to be able to distinguish your particular demonstration project as new so it can be allowable. Okay. So let me stop there for any questions about kind of our eligibility and allowability factors as well as their statutory authorities. And then after that, I'll go into the strategic plan linkage as well as the outputs and outcomes. And then after that, we'll get into the award information. So any questions about the background of the EJ Grants Program, environmental justice, our goals, our funding authorities, project types, or the eligible project activities and statutory authorities?
Okay.
If you have a question, just unmute yourself by pressing #6 to unmute your line. #6.
This is Sarah.
Hey, Sarah.
Hi, this is Sarah Griscom.
Hey, Sarah. Yeah, I can hear you.
I was going to collaborate with a tribal group here on Cape Cod, and I wondered if they're, you know, appropriate collaborator. They suffer and have all sorts of problems on their reservation, and I'd like to include them in my work. So,
okay. Yeah, a tribal organization, a tribal government is definitely an eligible entity on their own. So it sounds like you might be a nonprofit yourself. So, yeah, they would definitely be an allowable partner, and we would encourage partnerships on all the environmental justice grant projects. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Jacob, are we allowed to conduct experiments to demonstrate the existence of a problem? Let's say an air pollution concern?
Yes. Experiments are an allowable activity, yes.
Even though they might have been demonstrated in another setting across the country?
That's just for the definition of demonstration. But the experimental part of it is allowable on its own. So if you look at the top of page 9, the last bullet point is experiment.
Okay. Thank you.
Urban studies experiments, yeah.
Jacob, where can I get a hold of the information that you're reading off from?
Yeah, it's available on grants.gov as well as our EPA website. So if you go to – our website is probably easier because there's just more robust and comprehensive information there. Go to epa.gov/environmental justice, all one word. And then in the top banner, the third item will be a link to the $6 million available for EJ Grants funding. It'll take you to the actual request for application.
Okay.
So, again, that's epa.gov/environmental justice, and that'll take you to our EJ webpage. Okay. Okay. Other questions about project types and things like that? So there are examples of potentially eligible COVID-19-related projects on page 9 and 10. Examples of general environmental justice grant projects on 10 and the top of page 11. There's a lot of flexibility in terms of the types of projects that we funded. So on page 7, we list some of them right there in the middle, that bullet-pointed list right there, air quality and asthma projects, water quality and water sampling projects, food access projects, stormwater and green infrastructure, lead contamination, pesticides, other toxic substances, healthy homes, illegal dumping, emergency preparedness, disaster resiliency, environmental job training, youth development. So a wide range of different environmental justice projects and allowable activities. Just any of the activities that you propose, there needs to be that learning component to it, that transfer of information and transfer of knowledge. So experiments, studies, public education, training, monitoring, outreach, all those are eligible activities.
Jacob, another question regarding there's a local, I'm from the American Samoa EPA, and there's a local group, a nonprofit organization. It's affiliated with all types of schools across the island, private and public, and they're all affiliated in one organization. And it's basically an environmental club. So they promote learning through debris collection, cleaning the coastal areas, and also doing all sorts of projects, beautification and debris collection and all that sort. I was just wondering, that's why I asked about schools, if they are eligible to apply. But this one, although it's affiliated with members of schools, it's a nonprofit organization that stands aside, but it's partnered with schools. Is this organization eligible to apply for the grant?
Yep, sounds like it would be eligible to apply. It's a nonprofit organization registered in American Samoa, then that would be fine. So just because it partners with schools on several of its activities, that would not infringe on its eligibility for our program.
Okay.
And you, as part of the territorial government, would be able to apply as well. For
okay,
either
yeah,
a grant with them, yeah, for a grant with them, mm-hmm. or your own separate grant.
We're thinking about applying to the other environmental
yes.
justice grant, the one we'll be discussing tomorrow, but this one mm-hmm. I just wanted to ask of the nonprofit because they've been doing
yeah,
that. So, does that objective, is that justified? Does that qualify for the grant, the objectives that they have as a debris collection, beautification, environmental control?
Yeah, as long as there just has to be that environmental link. So if they're addressing debris cleanup, litter, so some solid waste disposal issues, it sounds like, then that would be fine. That would be eligible. Also, those litter and waste issues also affect the water quality as well. So they could also link in Clean Water Act authorities and eligible activities as well. But, yeah, as long as, all of our, because we're the EPA, so all of our projects have to have that environmental link. So they definitely sound like they have an environmental link and have specific environmental issues that they want to address with the funding. So that would be allowable.
If they happen to seek any references or assistance from our side of the, are we able to assist them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can be a partner on their
project.
You can be a partner on their project, and that wouldn't infringe on your ability to apply to. The other grant, the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving, it would not infringe on their ability to apply to this grant.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so you can be kind of strategic with how you do that. But, yeah, definitely.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's about 4:45 p.m., so we have about 45 minutes left. I do want to get into the point allocations, strategic plan, outputs and outcomes, and the award information. So let's just move on right now, and then we'll keep opening it up for questions after I cover several other sections. Okay? Thanks, everyone.
The leader has unmuted your line.
The leader has muted your line. To unmute your line, press #6.
Okay, everyone, so starting with the strategic plan linkage, this page is 11 and 12, so bottom of page 11. So all applications must support EPA strategic plan 2018 through 2022. The plan is available at the link in this section. You see it there. Applicants should briefly explain in their application how their project will further Goal 2, Objective 2.2 of the EPA strategic plan, which is to increase transparency and public participation. So this is only worth about 2 points in your application, so don't spend too much time in this section. Just take a look at the link in the section, briefly explain how your project relates to increasing transparency and public participation. So these are community-based projects, so that explanation in your application is pretty straightforward. But it is required, and you will be evaluated on it, so just be aware of that. Don't miss it because then you might lose 2 points. After that, we're getting into the outputs and outcomes and performance measures, pages 12 through 13 of the RFA. So outputs, definition. Outputs are environmental work products related to a particular environmental activity produced over a certain period of time. All outputs are measurable and must be measurable within the funding period. For example, the number of residents trained for the number of homes assessed are outputs. Outputs are what you do. Now, outcomes are the effect or benefit that will occur from carrying out a particular environmental activity. Outcomes also must be measurable, but all outcomes may not be achievable during the funding period, during the 12-month funding period. There are short-term, intermediate, and long-term outcomes. Short-term outcomes are characterized as changes in knowledge. Intermediate outcomes are changes in behavior, and long-term outcomes are changes in conditions. So for one-year projects, you're predominantly going to be working on the short-term and intermediate level. So overall, remember, while outputs are what you do, outcomes are the results of what you do, such as the number of families that have reduced exposure to lead due to a lead abatement project or something like that. The applicant should develop and describe a performance measurement plan to be achieved through the proposed activities. This plan will track project progress, output and outcome strategies, and will provide the basis for developing lessons learned to inform future recipients. A logic model is a useful tool to present performance measures. Your performance measurement plan should be written into the body of your project narrative and should reference or cite key information in your attached logic model. Generally, higher quality logic models and performance measurement plans include specific target metrics where possible that are possible for both outputs and outcomes. Okay? So you can see the appendices for samples of both of logic model templates. But again, remember specificity. So where possible, specific target metrics are helpful for your overall score and are helpful for us EPA reviewers to understand the scope of your project and what you're trying to do. So where possible, include specific target metrics. Okay. So those are outputs, outcomes, and performance measures. After that, in your performance measurement plan, starting on page 14, we have award information. So I went over a little bit of some of this before. So again, a reminder, so the approximate level of funding available is $2.8 million. $2.5 million comes from the EJ program, with $300,000 coming from OTAC for Ports Initiative projects for a total of $2.8 million. And approximately half will be available for a set aside for small nonprofits. So half for small nonprofits in general, and the other half for the larger organizations. So everyone is still encouraged to apply. And again, everybody's encouraged to apply that's eligible for a plethora of different project types and project activities beyond just the four areas of emphasis that we have, okay? And remember, to qualify for the small nonprofit set aside, you have to have 10 or fewer full-time employees and provide a roster, a table listing your full-time employees and their associated wages or salaries. So we can just verify that you do qualify for that small nonprofit set aside. And again, awards will be made in the amount of up to $50,000 per award for a one-year project, 56 projects nationwide with approximately 5 per EPA region. And like I said before, applicants should plan to have a start date of October 1st, 2021. So we should see that in your project plan, October 1st, 2021 to September 30th, 2022. Okay. After that, we have eligibility information. So I've gone over this a few times with questions, but it's laid out there, the eligible entities. So who's allowed to apply, the bottom of page 14. So you see that they're incorporated nonprofit organizations. So this is including but not limited to community-based organizations, grassroots organizations, environmental justice networks, faith-based organizations, and those affiliated with religious institutions. So U.S. territories, so territorial governments, they can apply directly. Tribal governments, they can either be federally recognized or state recognized, including Alaska Native villages. They're eligible to apply, and tribal organizations or Native American organizations. Okay, so those are eligible. So applicants, going back to the incorporated nonprofits, this detail is important. So applicant organizations claiming nonprofit status must include documentation that shows the organization is either a 501c3 nonprofit organization designated by the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, or they're a nonprofit organization recognized by the state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe in which the nonprofit is located. For the latter, documentation must be on official state government or territorial government letterhead.
Okay.
Also, eligible entities must be located within the same state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe where the proposed project will be located. This means that an applicant's registered address of record, in other words, the address designated on their IRS or their IRS or state sanctioned documentation, must be in the same state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe as the location of the proposed project. Unfortunately, this means that even in the Northeast, here in the mainland, the New England area, where there are many states clustered together, organizations can only propose projects in their respective state. So an organization, for example, located in New York can't propose a project located in New Jersey, even if that New York-based nonprofit organization has a long history with that New Jersey community. We have to be consistent with how we apply this requirement here internal to EPA. Why do we include this requirement? Remember, like I said before at the start of this call, applying organizations should have a direct connection to the underserved community. We feel that this in-state requirement really promotes that direct connection effectively. So in the past, prior to this requirement, some larger regional organizations would propose projects across state lines, but those organizations wouldn't have a strong connection with the target community and would propose using contractors or partners almost exclusively to perform the outreach and community engagement activities. And that's not really conducive to what we want to do here in the EJ Grants program. One of our main goals, as I said before, is to get the funds as close as possible to the people that need it the most. And funding an organization in a different state doesn't really help us in that effort. So that's why we have this in-state requirement. Okay. Fiscal agents and fiscal sponsors. Fiscal agents are eligible to apply to this opportunity as long as the fiscal agent or sponsor is a 501c3 or state incorporated nonprofit organization. However, the applying organization, the fiscal agent in this case, needs to understand that one, they will be evaluated using the evaluation criteria, including their programmatic capability, and two, they will ultimately be responsible for carrying out the project. So for all intents and purposes, if you use a fiscal agent, the fiscal agent is looked at as the lead applicant on the grant, and we are going to evaluate the fiscal agent for their direct connection to the underserved community and their capability to actually carry out an environmental justice project. So just be cognizant of that. So if they're acting as a fiscal agent for you, you're going to be looked at as a partner. You're not going to be looked at as the lead applicant, and the fiscal agent is going to be looked at as the lead applicant, and we're going to evaluate their capacity to carry out an environmental justice project.
Okay.
So if there are any kind of questions about that, and if it would, it may not, having them as a fiscal agent may not score as high if you yourself, you know, actually submit an application. Those are things that you need to consider when putting together your project plan and your proposal and who actually hits the button to submit their application through grants.gov. So just be cognizant of those things. Ineligible organizations. So the following entities, and just so you follow along with me, page 15, bottom of page 15. The following entities are ineligible to receive an award, but we encourage partnerships with these organizations. So you see them all there, colleges and universities, hospitals, for-profit businesses, state and local governments and their entities, quasi-governmental entities, for example, water districts or utilities, national organizations, and smaller chapters of those organizations. They're not eligible, as well as nonprofit organizations exempt from taxation under Section 501c4. So your 501c4 nonprofits are not eligible, as well as individuals, so we don't give grants to individual people.
Okay.
But all of those organizations, all of those ineligible entities, we encourage them to be partners on projects. So partners can receive portions of EJ grant funding through contracts or subawards. So partners can be as involved as possible in the formulation of the project plan. And can be involved throughout the entire project plan. They just can't hit the button through grants.gov, right? So you all the eligible entities, the incorporated nonprofits, the tribal governments, territorial governments, Native American organizations, you all have to apply. You all have to hit the button. But your partners can be as involved as they want to be in part in being a part of the project and being a part of developing the project plan. Okay. Let's move on to threshold eligibility. is pages 16 through 17. And then after this section, I'll cover threshold, and then we'll open it up for questions. There are always questions about eligibility and things like that. So in this section, or in this section about threshold eligibility, we highlight that all applications must be submitted through grants.gov. However, to even be able to submit your application through grants.gov, you first must be registered in both SAM.gov and grants.gov. So in this section, we stress the point of getting registered early. So you can see the red text in this section. Please take this to heart. Register as soon as possible. Please register as soon as possible. We point out here and in the grants.gov section later in the RFA that not registering in grants.gov or SAM.gov in a timely manner is not an acceptable reason to accept a late application. So every year we have several organizations that wait until the deadline to start their registration in SAM.gov or grants.gov or both. The registrations, they can take a month or more to be finalized. So as a result, these organizations, they wait too late. They can't apply through the website. They try to email me their applications, but emailing application is not allowable unless there's some rare exception. Applications must come through grants.gov or not at all. So don't register late and waste hours of project planning and grant writing. Register now as soon as possible so this situation doesn't happen to you. Okay. Also in threshold eligibility, remember your linkage to the environmental statutes. I mentioned this before. A project work plan must explain how the statute is tied to the local environmental and public health issue in the underserved community. Any failure to clearly and conclusively identify and cite at least one of the federal statutes in your work plan may result in your project not being considered for award. Okay. Also remember that an applicant must be located in the same state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe where the project is located. I mentioned that before and explained the reasoning behind that. Some funding restrictions, prohibited activities. So projects must not be used for the purposes of routine program implementation. So what we mean is that if your proposed project is strongly tied to a program that your organization developed years ago, then your project should propose some new element or be an expansion of that current program. For example, if your organization established an environmental education program for third graders years ago, do not simply request funding for another year of your third grade environmental education program. Instead, for example, propose the expansion of your program to the seventh grade or development of a new curriculum for the program. So again, your application doesn't have to develop something completely new from scratch, but it should propose something identifiable as new and different than your current work. So as long as your proposed project is at least slightly different and or new compared to your organization's current work, then your project is likely to be eligible. Also, projects must not be used for implementation of routine environmental protection or restoration measures. For example, implementation of a municipal curbside trash pickup program, duplication of work performed under a prior EPA grant isn't allowable, or completion of work which was to have been completed under a prior EPA grant. That's also not allowable. So if an application includes any ineligible tasks or prohibited activities, that portion of the application will be ineligible for funding and may, depending on the extent to which it affects the application overall, it might render the entire application ineligible for funding. Also, lobbying, litigation against the federal government, travel with federal employees, matching funds for other federal grants, large-scale construction, these are unallowable project activities as well. And there is not a cost-sharing or cost-matching requirement for the environmental justice grants. Okay, I think that gets us to page 17. So let me stop there, open it up for any questions on eligibility, so eligible organizations or eligible projects, so any questions about anything I just went over. You can just hit #6 to unmute your line, #6.
Hi, this is Holly, and my.
Hi, Holly.
This is Holly. Hi. Oh, good. Hey, I'm sorry. You may have gone over this, but is there a definition of an underserved population? Because in our area, I can think of several, but I'm not sure if you have a specific definition I should be applying.
Yeah, on page 1, there's a definition that we have. Let me scroll back there for you. Just one second.
Okay. Sorry about
actually,
that.
Actually, yeah. Starting on page 1, bottom of page 2, so underserved communities. For purposes of this announcement, the term underserved community refers to a community with environmental justice concerns and or vulnerable populations, including people of color, low income, rural, tribal, indigenous, and homeless populations that may be disproportionately impacted by environmental harms and risks.
Okay. So would small farmers, do you think, be count in that definition?
Yeah, if they're disproportionately impacted, let's say by high exposure to pesticides.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Would be, yep. Great. Yep. So if there's something like that, definitely.
Great.
Okay. Well, I have a question, Peggy.
Yes.
Anthony. I wanted to know if when you say incorporated nonprofit, does that mean that if a nonprofit has a 501c3 status, does that still mean that that organization needs to be incorporated?
If they have a 501c3 status, then they are eligible.
Okay, whether or not they've gotten an incorporation with the state or not.
Yeah, regardless, it needs to be either or. It does not have to be both. So you're either registered with the IRS as a 501c3, or you're registered with your state or territory as a nonprofit or operating in their state or territory or commonwealth.
Thank you, Jacob.
Yep, no problem.
Hi, Sarah here. I wondered, one of the problems with our rural community here is for tribal members to get off of the reservation travel to go to different areas. And we wondered if a bus or a van would be appropriate to fund if they wanted to get a type of small school bus.
It depends on how they're going to be using that bus. If they're going to be using that bus to further the larger project and the transfer of information, if they're using it for, say, field trips or something like that, then that would likely be eligible. But they just can't have a bus to just have a bus, and they're not going to be using
it. Oh,
no,
no. It would provide the ability to do the program that we want to do rather than hiring each time they need to come to the site. So, okay.
Right. And it would just be renting the bus. It wouldn't be purchasing the bus, because purchasing the bus, that would be basically the entire grant funding amount.
Okay. Right.
No.
Thank you.
Yeah, because we would have to evaluate your budget. And if a purchase of an old bus is $40,000 and the ceiling is $50,000, you would only have $10,000 for actually taking meaningful steps to address environmental justice in the community. So if you're renting it out, you see what I mean?
Yep, I got it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem. Any other questions before we get into the application and submission information? And I do want to have time to go over the point breakdowns a little bit before we run out of time. And again, we'll have at least one of these every week, but I just wanted to keep it going if there are no more pressing questions right now. Okay, let's move on to, was there a question? Application and submission information, pages 18 through 27. So this is what the components of your full application. Okay, so there are 7 items that an application package must contain. So you have the standard grant application forms, which are part of the grants.gov application process. So when you start to apply through grants.gov, you will automatically have to fill out these forms. So you see those forms there. I'm there with you on page 18, middle, those little arrows. So those forms are required as part of the grants process, okay? The grants.gov process, to be clear. After that, we have your project narrative attachment form. So this is your work plan. So the work plan is limited to 11 pages, and a template is provided from pages 19 through 24 that you can follow or use to help you organize your work plan. The template is the green portion of the RFA. So use of the template is not required but is strongly encouraged. Following the template will help ensure that you hit on all the key elements that your project will be evaluated on and will make it easier for the EPA review team to review your application. So the template is organized in the exact order of the evaluation criteria in Section 5, which we'll cover right after we finish this section. At that time, I can go over the point allocation for everyone. And you should use the project narrative attachment form in grants.gov to attach your work plan. So there's a project narrative attachment form, and there's an other attachment form. So use the project narrative attachment form to attach your 11-page work plan. Okay, so the itemized budget sheet, project performance measures, resumes, proof of nonprofit status, staff roster, those all can be attached using the other attachment forms, because those are things, those are documents that are supporting your project narrative attachment form, your actual work plan. Okay. So itemized budget sheet, as I was just mentioning, this sheet should be submitted using the other attachments form. Applicants must itemize costs related to personnel, fringe benefits, contractual costs, travel, equipment, supplies, other direct costs, indirect costs, and total costs. So this sheet should include sufficient detail for EPA to determine how federal funds will be used. Anything else? Note, if COVID-19 restrictions, so this is kind of some information, background information that might be helpful later on during the life of your particular EJ grant project. So if COVID-19 restrictions loosen during the life of your grant, then EJ grant funds may be used to travel to an in-person EJ grantee training workshop performed by your local EPA regional office. So your EPA project officer at that point will let you know if any in-person trainings may occur over the life of your grant. But right now everything is virtual, so you do not have to allocate any funding, any EJ grant funding for travel to an actual EJ grantee training right now, okay? But later on, when things loosen up, you might be able to use some of your grant funding to travel to any training that you want to attend. After that, we have your project performance measurements and your logic model. So as I said before, your logic model can also be attached using the other attachments form. This will make sure that you don't go over your 11-page work plan limit. If you don't use the other attachments form, we might inadvertently count your logic model as part of that 11-page limit. So just make clear that it's not part of your 11-page work plan. Please do attach it using the other attachments form. So your performance measurement plan should be included. Your performance measurement plan, which supports your logic model, the actual plan itself should be included in the body of your project narrative. So that would be the narrative text to kind of expound on how you're going to track your progress. I went over that a little bit before. And it should support and cite key information from your logic model. The logic model itself should be attached using the other attachments form. Your performance measurement plan should be the narrative that expounds on how you're going to track that project and cite information from your logic model. After that, we have resumes of your project manager and other key personnel. Also use the other attachments form. These shouldn't exceed 2 pages in length per resume. That should be sufficient. These also won't count against your 11-page work plan limit. Your proof of nonprofit status, to also use the other attachments form. Applicant organizations claiming nonprofit status must include this documentation that shows the organization is either a 501c3 as designated by the IRS or a nonprofit organization recognized by the state, territory, commonwealth, or tribe in which it is located. Documentation must be on official federal or state government letterhead. Also doesn't count as part of the 11-page limit. Your staff roster with hours and wage info. This is if you're applying for consideration under the small nonprofit set aside. So also use the other attachments form here and submit a document or spreadsheet where we can verify the number of full-time employees. A full-time employee is 40 plus hours per week per employee. So we can verify the number of full-time staffers you have on staff and the associated hours per week and their salary, wages, and details. So you can be considered for that small nonprofit set aside. Okay. So that's everything that an application contains, a full application. So let me go over 515. Let me go now right into, skip over. Again, I just want to remind quickly, pages 28 through 32. Are about the grants.gov requirement. This is critical. It's critical, 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 critical. All right. So the deadline is May 7th, 2021, 11:59 p.m. Eastern time. So if you're in a different time zone, be aware of the time difference. So don't let that be a reason that you're late. Also, all of your applications must be submitted through grants.gov. You need to register as soon as possible with grants.gov and SAM.gov to start that entire process. So there are requirements to get a DUNS number as part of actually registering in grants.gov and with SAM.gov. So the entire process can take up to 4 weeks, so please start that process now. There are helpful tutorials hosted by YouTube on the grants.gov website that'll walk you step-by-step through the process. If you run into any issues, they also have a hotline. So EPA does not manage the grants.gov website. That's for all federal grants from all different federal agencies. But definitely get in touch with the hotline and one of their techs to help you if you're having issues. If you're not able to get through to them, you can always reach out to me. I'll try to point you in the right direction. But as soon as possible, if you haven't started the process, if you're not already registered, start it as soon as you can. So the deadline doesn't sneak up on you and you're not able to submit when you want to submit and you miss the opportunity. Okay. So pages 28 through 32 go through the entire grants.gov process. So read that thoroughly and start that as soon as possible. So you're able to apply to the opportunities. Okay. Get forward, get into the scoring criteria itself. So we have time for general questions. So pages 33 through 42. Okay, so let's scroll there. So this is the ranking criteria. So this is how you're actually going to be evaluated, how your application is going to be scored, okay? And again, we're looking for applicants to have direct connections to their target communities. And that goal is throughout all of the evaluation criteria. So program objectives. So this is worth 46 points overall. You see that there, top of the table before it splits onto the second page, page 34. So that starts with your cover page, your project summary page. This is worth 2 points. This is all that compulsory information I went over before. So if you're applying to any of the areas, the four areas of emphasis, that information is there, as well as the title of your project, location of your project, whether you're applying for Ports Initiative funding, if you're a small nonprofit organization, we need a brief description of your applicant organization, less than 100 words or less, the environmental statutes your project is qualifying for, project types, special considerations. We'll keep all of that concise because we definitely want it to count to be a part of the project summary page all in one page because the project summary page itself does count as page one of your 11-page work plan limit. So if your project summary page bleeds onto page two, that just cuts down on the amount of room that you have for the rest of your work plan. So where possible, keep it concise, keep it to one word answers. For the climate or disaster resiliency, keep that quick so you save space and can get all this information in. Okay. So project summary page, if you include all the information, you'll get 2 points. After that, we get into the meat of the evaluation. So the environmental and public health information of the underserved community. So we're going to be looking at your characterization and description of the disproportionate impacts affecting your community. So those environmental and public health harms and risks that are impacting the individuals, the residents, the neighborhoods of your community. So who is the community comprised of and what are those disproportionate risks and health issues that they experience day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year. So after that, so that's worth in and of itself 6 points. Next, also worth 6 points, is the applicant describes the local environmental and public health issues that their particular project seeks to address. So number one, you can explain the totality of issues that your target community is afflicted with. Now in two, we're looking at what your particular project is going to address. So your project doesn't have to address the litany of issues that your target community might be feeling. That might not be reasonable, especially with a $50,000 project. But that second one kind of starts to drill in on how your $50,000 grant is going to focus in on certain of those particular environmental afflictions. Thirdly, also worth 6 points, applicant describes the local environmental and public health results their project seeks to achieve and how the underserved community will benefit from those results, also worth 6 points. Key notes, your applicants must include demographics, geographic information, community history, and other data to characterize the underserved community. We strongly encourage the use of EJ Screen to describe the community. We're going to have our EJ Screen webinar next Wednesday from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern time. So I'm going to put up the webinar link, the Zoom link, either later this evening or tomorrow morning, So you'll be able to just jump on Zoom, and we'll have that webinar next Wednesday, okay? And all of these pre-application assistance calls, webinars, will have recordings available for those as well. Okay. And also, if you believe any of the other factors, the areas of emphasis, special considerations apply, include those details here in the Environmental and Public Health Information section of your application. So after that, we're getting into the organization's historical connection to the underserved community. Like I mentioned before, we're looking for a direct connection to the target community. So here's the evaluation of that. So applicant will be evaluated on the description of the strong connection between their organization and the underserved community, including how they relate to all three sub-criteria. Those sub-criteria are 4 points each for a 12-point total. You see those there. So I mentioned there on page one at the start of the call, the community-driven nature of the projects that we fund. So number three is that community-driven participation, so especially how the underserved community's residents and organizations were involved in developing the current project plan and are a part of the decision-making process, both for the planning of the project and throughout the life of the project. So we definitely want community participation by residents and community leaders to be integral to the execution of your projects. Okay. After that, we're going into project linkages and partnerships. So I mentioned the strategic plan linkage before. That's worth 2 points. Your qualified environmental statutes, 3 points. So that's 5 points right there. Then we get into partnerships. Now, partnerships aren't required but are strongly encouraged. So you will be evaluated on partnerships. You won't be ineligible if you don't have any partnerships. But if you don't have any partnerships, you need to explain why you don't have any partnerships and how you can still execute a part of an environmental justice project without partnerships. So that's the bold there under the participant support cost hyperlink. You'll see that explanation. So you don't have to have partnerships. They're not required. But if you don't, you need to explain to us how you can still execute your project without partnerships. But if you do have partnerships, you'll be evaluated for 9 points, 3 points each on those particular bulleted criteria right there. So the plan roles of each partner, how each partner has a vested interest in working with the partnerships, how the applicant organization plans to maintain and sustain the relationships on into the future. We encourage you to attach letters of support, letters of commitment. That goes to bolster the legitimacy of the partnership that you express in your work plan. So that's a way to make sure that you get some of those points, or all of those points, ideally. Okay. After that, we're getting into the project activities. So this is criteria number two, project activities, milestone schedule, and detailed budget narrative, 22 points. So project activities, this is a description of the actual project, so what you're going to do in your project. So that's why it's worth 12 points in and of itself. It's very, very, very important. This explains to us, EPA, what you're doing with the $50,000. So all the components of your project, if they're workshops, water sampling, experiments, what have you, those details are included there. The milestone schedule underneath that, it supplements your project activities, so it kind of crystallizes for us exactly when some of those project activities are going to be executed. So the milestone schedule supplements your project activities. And then your budget sheet is attached, is another attachment. Your budget sheet explains the monetary breakdown of those project activities and your milestone schedule. And we need to make sure that our funds are being used reasonably and that it makes sense how you're actually going to budget out to achieve the project activities that you explain through your budget. So after that, we have environmental results, outputs, outcomes, tracking, sustainability. So this is an evaluation of your logic model, your performance measurement plan, and your sustainability plan and community vision. So the logic model itself, 8 points. Again, it should be attached as an other attachment. And like I said before, include specific metrics where possible. Your performance measurement plan, that's actually written into the body of your work plan narrative, but you should cite your logic model and different elements of your logic model to explain your performance measurement plan. And your state sustainability plan and community vision, that is pretty self-explanatory. Just read that clearly so you explain that these environmental justice small grants are really to get the ball rolling in the community, but we want a vision, and we want part of the project and the project planning to have a community vision and vision where the community wants to go, so where this project is hopefully leading towards. then that helps us track sustainability and overall progress of our grant funds as well as of the communities. Programmatic capability, straightforward, 10 points. We're just going to look at your organizational experience and your staff experience there, your ability to expend awarded grant funds, and then your past performance. Will be a list of federally funded and or non-federally funded assistance agreements. Assistance agreements are grants, so not contracts. So list out a number of your federal or non-federal grants that you received over the past 3 years. So you can list up to five, no more than five, but over the last 3 years, let us know what grants you received. They can be local grants, foundational grants, or they can be federal grants. If you don't have any federal grants experience or non-federal grants experience, no grants experience at all, definitely write that in your application. Don't hide it or anything, because you can still get 3 points if you don't have any experience. But we need to see that you don't have any experience. That needs to be explicit so we can still give you 3 points. So that's a neutral score, and that information and that explanation is the last paragraph within the table. Okay? So if you don't have any grants experience, that's fine. It's fine. Just let us know. Be transparent, you can still get 3 points, and that'll be helpful, you know. All right, so I wanted to stop now because we don't have that much time. So those are the 100 points, so that's 100 points total.
Jacob, I have a quick question.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
I have a couple of questions. First off, regarding the qualifications for the proof of a nonprofit organization or its registration affiliation with the government or a private mm-hmm. entity, does it have to have a 501c3?
Nope. Nope. If you're registered with a state, if you're registered with a territorial government, there's not a 501c3 designation, but you would just have to provide documentation that they're either recognized by the state or territory as a charity, as a charitable organization, or as a nonprofit. So there are several states have nonprofit databases. So a printout of a database table would be sufficient documentation. A basic business license from states oftentimes have a note that this is a charitable organization or they're recognized as a charity. Just some sort of documentation from the state or territory that that organization is operating as a nonprofit in that specific locale.
Mm-hmm. Okay, my second question is, will you be, because this seems to be a very informal and, important and informal approach toward explaining the entire process, and the members of the organization are not able to make it on here. There's a crisis going on back home. Will you be able to do another webinar such as this in the future before?
Yeah. So I have one of these scheduled every single week going through April 7th. The last two are going to be in Spanish, and I'll have these recordings available as well. So they'll be posted on the website, or you can just reach out to me directly, and I can send you a recording also. So I wanted to do these as quickly as possible and have them recurring every week because this closes relatively soon in about 8.5 weeks. So I wanted to make sure that we had enough report, enough opportunity to ask questions and answer. And I'll stay on after 5:30 if people still have questions. But yeah, there's definitely going to be another one. Our EJ Screen webinar demo and question and answer is going to be next Wednesday, the following week. We have on Tuesday the 16th in the evening time, Eastern time, another EJ Small Grants call. The following week after that, we have an EJ Collaborative Problem Solving call. So there will be plenty of opportunities to ask questions.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yep. So, yeah. Any other questions about the point breakdowns, everything that is required in an application?
Well, I had noticed, going back a little bit beyond this last section here, that mm-hmm. CERCLA was not listed among the statute. Is that that's correct?
Yeah, CERCLA Superfund is not eligible under this program.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just some key thoughts about writing your application. And like I said, I'll stay on as for as long as people have questions. So just key thoughts, pointers that I have. So let's start with point allocations. So remember to pay attention to the point allocations as you're writing your application. In general, you should spend more time and effort in the sections that are worth more points. For example, please don't spend hours and hours explaining the linkage between your project and the EPA strategic plan. Subcriteria is only worth 2 points. It should be brief. Make sure you spend sufficient time on really important things like characterizing the disproportionate impacts affecting your target community. That's 18 points total. Or explaining your project activities. That's 12 points. All right, so just make sure that you allocate your time to kind of mirror the point allocations in your actual application. I think that's helpful. After that, be efficient. So it may not seem like it, but 11 pages goes by quicker than you think, especially when you're dealing and detailing the community's issues and their history. So be concise where possible and attach the permitted documents as attachments. That's helpful as well. As I mentioned before, use specific metrics. That's a key pointer. Use specific metrics. When developing your logic model and performance measurement plan, where possible, always include target metrics for outputs and outcomes. For example, add estimates for the number of residents who will attend your training or the number of water samplings you aim to execute or to take, as well as track the number of people you plan to engage and conduct outreach to. Your short-term outcomes should also include target metrics. However, your intermediate and long-term outcome projections don't need to be as specific as those results, especially the long-term outcomes won't be felt for years. But where possible, in your logic model and in your performance measurement plan, include target metrics, project activity section, milestone schedule. Where possible, be specific. Specificity really bolsters our understanding, the EPA review team's understanding of the scope of your project. Lastly, key pointer is convey the story of your community. So unlike some other more data and measures-driven EPA programs, the EJ program is primarily a people-driven program. So this means that the needs and experiences of people is the primary driver where our resources go, especially for those who are the most vulnerable. Remember that those of us who will review your applications are people too, and people relate to stories. So while having a lot of data and background metrics about a community is very important, even more important than that is using that data effectively to convey the story of your community. So in addition to including data and metrics in your project narrative, weave in information and experiences from the community. How will your project help the people of that community? How has your previous work helped that community? Quotes from community members, as well as short stories, testimonials from residents about living in the community and or your successes and their successes working with your organization are great supplements to the data and metrics you provide. So where possible, make sure that you convey the data and the metrics in a way that is understandable and relatable. Just don't spit out the data. You know, make sure that it's relatable for both the community that you're serving as well as us EPA reviewers. That's helpful as well. Okay, and just as a closing, if there are no other questions, look on page 43 for the anticipated announcements and award dates. So this was released earlier this week on Tuesday, March 2nd, closing May 7th. May will be doing threshold eligibility and starting the scoring process of all applications we receive. From June through August, we'll be doing more of the scoring and evaluation of all the applications into the separate tracks. By September 2021, the regional EPA offices will request any required application documentation from selected applicants, and awards will be made by the regional offices. And again, we're looking to award approximately 5 grants per EPA region for the 10 EPA regions. We're looking to make a national press release announcement and press push about the new grantees around October of 2021. So that's kind of our timeline, and we'll have EJ grantee kickoff workshops for all of the new grantees as well. Okay, and I'll stop there for any questions, general questions and answer, and so we can close, okay?
Thank you, Jacob. See you next week. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. Thank you, Jacob. Yeah. Great presentation.
Thank you. Thank you all for your interest in the program.
Hello.
Thank you so much.
Alan.
Bye-bye.
Yes, Ms. Allen.
Thank you so much.
Hello.
Yes. Yep.
Sorry.
I have a question about prior grant experience.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, so our 501c3 is literally brand new. We just did it, started it. But many of us who have formed this group do have experience in our workplaces or in submissions or other things like that. May we speak to that, or is it a narrow criteria for grant experience?
No, definitely speak to that. I would speak to that in the staff experience and qualifications of the project manager. So under programmatic capability, this is on page 40. So it's an evaluation of the experience of the project manager and the staff.
Okay, wonderful. And also in that
put that there. And for organizational experience, go ahead and put that information there. And then you explain that you're brand new, you've just been incorporated together, but you've been working together for a while. I'm sure that will be helpful in that session as well, okay?
Perfect. That's exactly what I was hoping to hear. And then I am a currently funded on an evaluation grant, but it's because of COVID, it got delayed, so it hasn't. They keep extending it and extending it. So it's an in-progress grant. That's an okay thing to report also, right?
Yes, yes, definitely, yes.
In that personal experience that I've got. So
yes, okay. You would actually list that out in the next session in past performance. Just list the federally funded and or non-federally funded assistance agreements and be like, yeah, we received this grant, you know, in September 2020, and it's been extended, and it's still an active grant. And you should say that you're making all your reporting requirements, and it's been extended, and it's still being extended, and that's fine.
Okay. And also, yep. In your partnering organizations, can those be some of those that could not be the original applicant? So can you partner with a academic or a healthcare agency?
Exactly. Yes, you can. So if you want to partner with a hospital or a clinic, school district, university, that's great.
Oh, that's awesome. That's exactly who we are. Wow.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, there you go. Great. Yeah, and partners can receive funding. Yeah, partners can receive portions of funding through contracts and subawards. If there was a university, for example, that you wanted to be a data processor and analyze some of your samples, then you could allocate, I don't know, $10,000 to them for having their students do that or something like that. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. And do we need subcontracts or just a letter of support from those?
Nope. Just a letter of support. You don't have to subcontract. You don't have to subaward. You don't have to contract. But you can if you want to.
Wow. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yes. No problem. No problem. Remember, May 7th is the deadline, okay?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, sir. Okay. Bye.
Yep.
Jason.
Yes. Yes, yes, I'm here.
Jacob, I had another person named Jason. Jacob, this is Andrea again. One quick question. Since the project, you said, is to start October 2021.
Yep.
But announcements will not be going out until October. So can it start with the planning phase?
Yeah, we're looking to announce who we select, but all projects should plan to have an October 1st start date.
First.
Okay.
And on October 1st, if you want to start kind of your community visioning or something, that's fine. That's fine to start that then.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yep.
And thank you very much for this seminar.
Oh, thank you so much for your interest. Really appreciate it.
Okay, bye. Have a good evening.
Bye-bye. You too. Okay, everyone, if there are no more questions, again, we have another call tomorrow for the other grant opportunity, the Environmental Justice Collaborative Problem Solving Opportunity. So that
Jacob?
GPA. Oh, yes. I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot to unmute myself.
So I think I know what the answer is going to be, but I just want to be 100% sure for when I go back to my executive director. It's about the national organizations being ineligible. Mm-hmm. I think we classify as one. We're based out of D.C. We have staff in states across the country. We have a bunch of member groups. But the project we would be applying for is for in D.C. for the our environmental justice staffer. They'd be doing a project focused in Washington D.C. because and that's where they're based. Would we be eligible or would we be disqualified because we are a national organization?
You're a national organization with staff throughout the country, but it sounds like you have member organizations, and sounds like there might be a member organization in D.C. If they have their own 501c3 designations, then they could be the lead applicant, and you could still be a partner.
Okay. I just wanted to get confirmation on that.
Yep.
Awesome. Thank you very much. Great presentation.
Okay, everyone. Yep, so we have another call tomorrow for the other grants opportunity, the collaborative problem solving, and then we have our EJ Grants, EJ Screen demo next Wednesday, March 10th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So if you want a copy of the recording, just reach out to me. My information is at the top of page one, both my phone number and my email, and I'll be in touch with many of you soon. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will be terminated in 5 minutes.